going viral too soon in your career is a bad thing.
If you get too much attention too soon and your product is not good enough and it's not ready, I don't think consumers give you a second chance.
Women love dirty jokes. I feel men laugh at absolutes and women laugh at detail.
Creating content is actually a very discipline-driven, complex, hard process.
Yeah. Content creation is distribution. Distribution brings me ticket sales.
Human beings have become growth obsessed in every possible way.
Do decent art, but be a good salesman. Success gave money to go for therapy.
Like, people who are self-aware are very like absorbent of feedback.
You have to swallow a pill when you see your competitor do something that works really well. Yeah.
Are we rolling?
I have been a fanboy for, so I don't know, I remember dropping you a message on YouTube, I think in 2015 or 2014 or 2015.
Yes.
On your cover of Sham.
No. Back then,
yeah, you put, and it was a lovely song. Thank I had an emotional attachment to the song because in 2011 my younger brother, the pampered child of our home, went to the US to study. He was at Stanford and he is a classical musician. So he picked up a classical music course by Pandit Amjad Ali Khan, the sarod player.
Yeah.
And he was doing his PhD in computer science, but doing this on the side. And the final exam of that course was like a performance. You had to sing a song and so on, or play your instrument. He sang Sham in like a classical way.
Oh.
Okay. With like two Spanish guitarists. And it was very fun thing. I remember seeing that video like 7-8 months after he had left and feeling super emotional about it. So that song was important to me. And fast forward 3-4 years, I just saw you sitting in your bedroom in front of a computer. I think you were like looking at the lyrics and super casual. And I had no idea you were a comedian.
Yeah.
I just thought you were a musician.
Yeah.
And then I saw, after a few months, or maybe on your channel, I forget now, it's too long back. Then I saw you and Abhish like being total goofs. I think you guys were
traveling the world, yeah.
I think you guys did a song. Was it Call Me Baby? Did you guys do something on Call Me Baby?
By the way, that is not Abhish. That's my childhood friend Jason, who looks just like Abhish.
Oh, that's not Abhish?
That's not Abhish, yeah, yeah. And that was, Jason and I had this thing of, we used to lip sync songs in the worst way possible. So I do some, is that video still up? I don't know.
I have no idea.
This one, in the end of this song, I lose my mind and I take off my shirt and I start running around the lawn.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, this guy is a funny guy also. So I was like super talented. And that's when I think I found a way to get your number.
Yeah.
And I dropped you a message and you till date. Like you're so nice, even though you're like now become a big deal and you know, I'm sure, I don't know whether you are able to travel in public easily. No.
I know, I mean...
You get accosted?
No, people, I think younger people recognize me and I think now also what's really insane is after the show and I take a picture, all of them unanimously like, I should see you in fifth standard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I think the sweetest story was a mom came up to me and she said that my son used to not eat his food till we saw a Kenny video. No, I have not made a lot of videos. So I hope your son is not starving. Then he's right next to her. He's like this tall boy. He's like, yeah, I still love your videos. So I was like, wow. So it's quite insane how all of this, the effect of it is so overwhelming. I don't think about it.
Yeah. I remember then I started seeing you a lot more regularly on YouTube.
Yeah.
You started touring. You became, you have your special now. And but I think your journey with content is like one multi-dimensional. Right? You've done a lot of things. You're a very talented human being. I think you pick up the guitar during sets and all also.
Yeah.
So I think you appeal to a lot of people, but I think you've been at it for a long time.
Yes.
I oftentimes think that you've done it without an agenda. You've actually done it to have fun.
That's very true. Right? That's what I was nervous about today's podcast, because asking Aurav also like, what is the purpose of this? Because I have not had a very strong agenda for anything.
Yeah.
It's always instinct driven. So yeah. Yeah.
No, that's perfect. So, what we wanted to do today, and I'll give you like a 2-minute level deep dive. I am the founder of Bombay Shaving Company. We are a personal care business.
Yes.
So, for 9 years now, we are now India's number 2 shaving brand by size. So, it's a fairly sizable business. We now do around 300 crores of revenue per year.
That's a lot.
Yeah. But it's not enough. Gillette has 2,000 plus crores. So, there's a long way to go.
But Gillette is very far.
Yeah. 120 years old.
From the care that your company has.
Thank you so much.
2000, so that's the goal, like to surpass Gillette?
Yeah, if you want to be number one.
Damn, man.
That's how big we need to
Chandra,
be.
Chandra, you need to hang out with me more, bro. If it was up to me, you would have been happy with 10 crores.
Yeah, actually, sometimes I think about it. Yeah. And I don't know, I'm watching this show called Hacks. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, it is unbelievable.
I've just had a baby, so we haven't been to a lot of things.
I know. So I use travel time to watch it, but that has something similar. It's actually about two women. One is like this celebrated celebrity comedian. She's probably 70 plus.
Ooh.
She's done 25,000 shows in Vegas. Oh. She has seen headlines and she's like a big deal. Like, she's a celebrity. And she is recruits this 25-year-old writer who's like this Gen Z, super woke kind of writer. And it's the way the relationship builds out.
Oh, wow.
I have not fallen in love with a TV show like that for a while.
I'm going to see it tonight. Even if it means my daughter is hungry and is screaming. I'm like, wait a second. I need to see this show. But it sounds cool. Yeah.
It's all like
20... It's two ideologies. Yes. Yeah.
And I think it's beautiful because the relationship builds out beautifully. There's this celebrity, egoistic, slightly old school comedian who's obviously very good at her work.
Yeah.
And there is this new age, confident, but employee.
Mm.
But, you know, she was beautiful. Yeah. So I've fallen to... And it's 25, 30 minute episode. So it's nice. Not like you don't have to spend a lot of time to go through one.
Yeah.
It's very quick.
Yeah.
I measure content in terms of quality by how many times I rewind something to watch it over and over again. Okay. I do it a lot in this show.
Got it.
I used to do it a lot in Friends,
okay.
Modern Family,
yeah.
And a lot of the stand-up that I watch. So.
Damn, that's high praise. I'm a huge fan of Modern Family as well. Friends, obviously, yeah. And Seinfeld. But Modern Family is shockingly well-written.
Yeah.
And you know the quality of jokes that they just threw away
yeah.
as a side comment. And I can't believe they said that. And I rewind, just like you yeah. said, and to hear, I'm like, they relegated this amazing joke as a side comment.
Yeah.
Like, I would feel any comedian would make that their main joke.
Yeah. And sure. Even the timing of the actors.
Yes.
Who's your favorite actor?
I would say Phil.
Is, yes.
Because, like, in comedy, like, being the flamboyant, loud one is the easier laugh.
Yeah.
Because it's so impactful, you can say it. Phil does a lot of these subtle, and he's a sweet guy.
Yeah.
So the sweet humor is kind of, but I laugh the hardest. And he does it very quick, like he'll miss, like he'll say something he's not supposed to and immediately correct.
Yes.
Very, that's very hard to execute. Right.
Even Jay, like for me, yeah. Jay is a brilliant actor.
That's true. Yeah.
Even 2.5 Men, for example,
yeah.
that annoying brother, yeah. Alan, I think his comedic timing was off the charts.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in comedy, to be honest, everybody alley-oops everybody. Like,
yeah.
you know, the straight man and the crazy analogy, which is there's a crazy person and a straight man.
Yeah.
If you have two crazy people, it's very irritating.
Yeah.
It's the straight man acknowledging the crazy behavior that makes it funny.
Yeah.
What invariably happens is the straight man is like, ye toh interesting nahi hai, but it's because of the straight man that the crazy person looks funny on.
Yeah. So contrast.
The contrast. So that's why in Modern Family and a lot of comedy shows, I feel like the person like... laying the foundation of comedy is ignored.
Yeah.
Because they're not like the flamboyant one. But yeah.
You're right. Even Friends, I think people loved like either Chandler or Joey or all three women.
Yeah.
But I genuinely felt David Schwimmer was
yeah.
the glue of that show.
That's right.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
He took on a lot. Like yeah. I think he was made fun of the most.
Yeah.
He had the worst moments.
Yeah.
But I think it was brilliant. Yeah. But yeah, I think with for this, right? So we've been running this for 9 years. With us, we always struggle with marketing and becoming center of conversation because we're in a category where a consumer uses a product alone inside the comfort of and privacy of his bathroom and men don't talk to each other. So our brand was always very limited on word of mouth in comparison to any other brand in any category, whether it's chocolates or biscuits or beauty products or shampoos. There's always word of mouth. There's always, you know, people talking. Or you do it socially, like you and I will have maybe a biscuit together or chocolate or ice cream or a Coke. But our category was no one spoke about razors, right? It's a similar problem to toothpaste.
Oh.
Like oral care is again a very low engagement category that way. It's very personal. So we realized, you know, we're taking on a huge, very successful, rightfully so great product brand called Gillette and now Philips. How do we become center of conversation? And we realized that we're a young challenger entrepreneurial brand. So what is young challenger entrepreneurial is entrepreneurship in India.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, can we build a podcast around entrepreneurship, which kind of mirrors my LinkedIn profile.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very vague idea. Okay. If we do that, we might get 20-year-old, you know, kind of kids who love entrepreneurship to come and watch. And then through the podcast, we can make them aware of our brand and they can, you know, kind of become users. and it worked like a dream.
Mm.
Right? It seemed like a far-off idea, but we have now done 75 plus episodes. We don't have a large followership, but we have a very engaged followership. And Tanmay says it very well. He said, you know, sometimes you need a lot of views and sometimes you need a lot of engagement, and the correlation between those two things are not as high as one might imagine.
Mm.
You would much rather have a small, sharp audience watching your video for 20 minutes than a large audience just scrolling past it for 30 seconds, and sometimes you need one or the other. And we started the podcast and we realized that we are really making a difference for our brand and to our viewers. And our viewers are basically young people who want to be entrepreneurs in their own life. They could be, you know, starting their own company. They could be someone like Tracy who's, you know, in an entrepreneurial environment but wants to kind of do her own thing.
Yeah.
They could be someone who's, you know, might want to do it for their family business. It's a whole variety of people.
Yeah.
And we realized that on the podcast, we can actually take one skill every year and disseminate it through exports.
And now it's content creation.
Yeah, so last year was sales.
Yeah.
So we got in like FMCG gurus, senior folks who had been on the road, built out distribution and so on. And it was a wonderful thing. We got like, we call it Razorpreneur.
Yeah.
And we said, you become a Razorpreneur, sell our razor. And the one who sells the most will come onto an episode of The Barbershop and share their experience with like a... So we got the global chief operating officer of Reckitt, Aditya Sehgal, lovely human being, to come and mentor these 10 people. And then it was a great thing. We said, okay, this year, let's do it around content. Because we have benefited from content a lot.
Yeah.
And we're like, we're realizing that the content, the lines are now blurring. Anyone who's running a business, whether it's a sari shop owner in Bangalore or whether it's a sweet shop owner in Jaipur or a large business with large brands, everyone is now telling stories.
Yeah.
The consumer is becoming a lot more demanding of, I want to know what's behind the brand.
Yeah.
So everyone's getting into creating content, and people who are creating content are getting into businesses.
Mm.
Right? They're building out monetizable properties, assets, skills, all of that, right? So the content game is now super sharp and will get very competitive. So we wanted to bring in people, and I wanted to like just basically know your story of how you started with content, even if it's agenda free. How did, like, there's a, in McKinsey there used to be this, you know, this 2x2, like right to win, like why is Kenny best at this, and size of pie, which is why the market is so big, right? And you kind of have hit the golden one on it because you combine your skills with your audience so beautifully. But talk about, I mean, what content and what creation has been for
that you. Sounds like that is very intentional. Like, I don't know if I thought about it that way. Also, I just want to highlight what you said. Men don't talk to each other. Such a heavy-ass statement that you just mentioned. Which is actually what I spoke about in the whole, my last special was about a massive... It's a massive lack of skill that men have, which is communication is quite sadly horrific with men. And men, as you said, don't talk to each other. They don't celebrate what they like. Actually, if they like something a lot, the less they talk about it, because like then more people will find out about it.
Yeah.
So that's a nice thing. I think we should break that down somewhere down, but. I don't know, the agenda, if the simple agenda was, I did not want to do what everybody else was doing, because I think I had an aha moment in class. It was in sixth standard. I went to Kendriya Vidyalaya, so it's a miracle I'm still alive, you know. Most of my KV friends are all in rehab, so it's a miracle I'm here with you, Shantanu. So, thanks.
So in Bangalore?
All over my dad is in the Navy.
Okay.
But Bangalore was the majority where I studied. And I remember sixth standard, everybody was on their desk writing, and I looked up and I just saw everybody doing the same thing. And I was like, this seems like a scam, and I've got stuck in it. And I have so much to say and express. This is not it. And that Kira kind of went into my head. And in 10th and 11th is when that Kira culminated into a video camera.
Okay.
I was like, this is what I like to do. And that video camera I discovered because of YouTube. In 2007 was when YouTube came to the world, and in 2008 it came to India. And I saw kids on YouTube who looked like me, like I was in the 10th standard, making videos. So I was like, oh, this is not an adult thing. It's even a child has access.
And what kind of videos were you watching at that time?
Special effects. There were these lightsaber videos.
Okay.
Where these two kids had lightsabers. And I was like, how are they doing? And I love Star Wars. And this particular guy, his name was Ryan something, and he had a website, and he put tutorials on how you can make it. And my dad, the best thing he did was give me a computer when I was young. So I was very like good with computers.
Huh.
So I was like, this is, it is a lot of work. It's a lot of instruction. It's a lot of focus, but I'm not tired. Unlike school.
Yeah, where it was fun for you.
It was fun. It is the reading a book, like a textbook, so painful, yeah. And listening to a teacher, so painful. But 8 hours I used to sit on the computer and rotoscope a lightsaber.
Really?
Yeah, and I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. So my content journey actually came from a very straightforward purpose that I have ideas, and a video camera is the best way to realize those ideas, and I really wanted people to see it.
Okay.
That is an ingrained thing in me, that it's not about just the idea, it's the this and me looking at your face.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm just built that way.
It's a manifestation of the impact of that idea, yeah, on someone.
I would love seeing reactions.
So were you always a performer, like in school, yes, theater, music, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, KV, as you know, in KV, we have none of that.
Okay.
You're not allowed to sing. If you sing any Western song, you're like reprimanded. You're supposed to sing traditional songs and all. So I used to imitate, I mean, it's true. I think when I was young, I used to imitate the priest in church, because it's, again, very painful to sit through. I just couldn't sit through things. So I used to just imitate the priest, imitate my uncle and aunt. And my family is very sweet. They used to ask me to put up a performance.
Yes.
Like, hey, imitate the priest, show us what you did. So it was always there. And this whole, I knew it was not an isolation. I was not like a painter who just like was happy with the painting and then move on to the next. Yeah. For me, it's like, I want you to see the painting.
Yeah, and tell me how it is.
Tell me how it is. Yeah. What has it made you feel? So that was always there. So the biggest advantage I had, I felt, in my career blowing up was this beautiful coincidence of me knowing how to shoot and edit, being good with computers, and being a performer.
Yeah.
And whenever people meet me and say, stand-up has blown up, I'm like, stand-up didn't blow up. I did stand-up for 5 years. Before I went viral,
yeah.
Nobody gave a shit about stand-up. It was confined to small rooms of 20 people who were trying to have a drink. And you were ruining their evening. YouTube is what blew it up. But it's not this YouTube exists, you as a stand-up comedian will do well. You have to go shoot it, edit it, put it up. And that's what blew up stand-up. So stand-up is just a byproduct of distribution becoming democratic.
Yeah.
So
you're right. YouTube is what made stand-up in India.
Yeah, stand-up exists like when I started doing stand-up at 17 or 18. I think Veer Das was doing it for 6-7 years by then.
He also had a whole host of like older stand-up comedians, right? From Surinder Sharma to like Raju Srivastava, etc.
They had TV.
Yeah.
What do you do if you're a kid in Bangalore with no connections to the industry?
Yeah.
It was only because of YouTube. And in my Amazon special, my last line is thanks to parents, friends, and YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's the single most
powerful.
Because I read a lot of books about like business stuff as a kid. And I think one thing that I remember still said that Google gives its best products for free. And once it becomes like a part of your life is when they start charging.
Yeah.
And that's the approach even I took. Like there were a lot of these comedians who were older than me who were like, you put your whole show on YouTube? This was in 2011 or 12. Now what will you do? I think I'll write a new show. It was a lot of like this scarcity mindset that, but I was like, I remember Google puts their best products for free.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to put my best stand-up for free. And if people like it, eventually they'll pay for it.
Yeah.
It's that young confidence that you'll be successful one day.
Yeah. What are the aha moment for you? Like, what are the first time you became viral? Like, was it a clip? Was it a musical video?
No, it is.
I discovered you through Sham and
that was my pre and Jason video. Became viral. So you like an OG person.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sham. Thank you.
My pleasure.
You like come from my 1,000 view days.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a long story. I mean, like I had stage fright.
Really?
Yeah, I had crippling stage fear. So I used to stand on stage in 8th standard, I just look down and start shivering. So I don't know. Again, I keep thinking about like it was a strong draw for me to go to stage and perform. And I was like, and as you see anybody perform, I was like, I want that. I was very clear as a kid. It was not the after effects of performing. It was, I want to be able to confidently go on stage and tell a story. But if I come off stage, I don't want to talk to anybody. That's not what I want. It's just that, able to express.
That moment, yeah.
Yeah, and again, I read a book about public speaking. I don't remember the name. And the one thing I took from that was preparation.
Okay.
Prepare your speech 50 times till you don't need the paper. And that's how we get over stage fear. Yeah. And that's how I caught the bug. And then I was also into music because my dad exposed me to a lot of music growing up. So I had that bug of like, I want to play an instrument. So I learned how to play the guitar. Still very shy, very introverted. But this bug of music, performance, telling stories, it was a lot of, when we, I was in first year college when I also started doing theater because again, I hated who I was. I was like, I don't like this shy guy. And I did theater, and I did theater to also improve directing, which I wanted to be a filmmaker. So it was always led by what do you want to do?
Mm.
Because I'm not happy with how the world is and what situation I've been put in.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't want to be an engineer. My dad's a very smart IIT graduate.
Man.
My brother's also very smart. I was just not happy. I was like, I would rather be poor and do what I love than I just couldn't do it. I tried a 9-to-5 job.
Where you were?
I worked in a subtitling company. I won't name it because I just left one day.
Okay.
So I don't know if they can sue me. So I don't name the company. Can you get sued if you just walk out?
No, you want a bond?
No, it was like a per hour basis.
But you didn't tell them that I'm not coming.
No, I was too traumatized. So it's some random company. I don't think they exist
now. How long did you do that for?
2 months.
Okay. Not a long time. That's yeah. Okay.
I did 9-to-5. Again, same movement happened. I was at a traffic signal. And I looked to my left. It was 8:30 in the morning. And there were people on bikes. And they were all like just waiting in the signaling van. And I was like, they are unfortunately in a situation where they have to support their family.
Correct.
But I have the privilege where my parents are okay.
Yeah.
So why are you doing this?
Yeah.
So take that risk. You're not forced to take a job.
Yeah.
So that was that moment. Like, just do something before your dad starts asking you, what are you doing with your life? So I just did everything, Chandra. I did freelance shooting. I did corporate videos. I did even corporate training. I just scammed my way into everything. I think anything but sitting and doing something I don't love.
Yeah, I completely. But you touched upon a very important topic, which is creating content is actually a very discipline-driven, complex, hard process.
Yeah.
Because you see only the culmination of it eventually. I went to a Gaurav Kapoor. I don't know. You know this comedian?
I love Gaurav Kapoor. Yeah. He's
incredible. Actually, we're shooting with him in Delhi in a few days. And I went to one of his live shows in September. And he said, all the women here are thinking Gaurav has become fitter. So you want to know what diet he's on. All the men here are thinking, isme kya hai? Even I can do comedy.
Yes.
And it really hit home. I agree with him because everyone thinks that they can do it. And it's so fucking hard. Everyone thinks today that they can make a reel or a piece of content or a podcast that can go viral. It's not easy. It requires understanding of distribution. Tanmay said, interestingly, he said, content is increasingly becoming very nepotistic. Like, you need to know people who will kind of collab with you, etc., etc. Starting from scratch becomes very hard because obviously everyone's getting into it and there's like a massive supply of content. So it's much harder today. But it requires a lot of work. It requires resilience because you have to go through so much failure, rejection.
I go to therapy mainly for this. Like, the amount of how hard you are on yourself about, am I making enough videos? Am I doing enough? Am I as entertaining as other content creators? Like, it's a lot of mental duress. It's constant and it's not healthy. So I don't think it's a healthy field to be in because every video, every stand-up performance, you're starting from scratch. You don't have the benefit of being a comedian for 10 years. You don't have the benefit of making 300 videos before this video.
Yeah.
Someone is watching you for the first time. And someone is watching you with this new context of how pop culture is right now.
Yeah.
So if, for example, even this podcast, I think like 5 years ago, the way people do podcasts is far less well produced.
Yeah.
Now people don't see a good mic, they tune off. They're like, I'm hearing, mujhe nahi sunna.
Yeah.
That's not your fault. I mean, imagine you did this one-hour podcast, like, I don't like the background. Next.
Move on, yeah.
So it's a very heavy toll it takes on you. So if anybody's getting into this, that's why I feel I survived for like so long. It's because the intention was never the views or how I'm scaling. The intention was, am I able to make a video on an idea that's exciting?
Yeah.
And that beautifully kind of translates into doing different things, which is good for your audience. That translates into having some sort of discipline to not stop because you're not getting... It's a very nice hack to stay in the business for long.
Mm.
It's very counterintuitive.
Yeah.
So not look at the outcome, but look at the germination reason.
Yeah.
That you have a good idea.
Does it breed insecurity constantly? Is that what therapy and like switching off is involved? Because I'm for me, for example, I read a lot of comments on my
YouTube videos. Man, everybody says don't read comments. Like, of course.
Of course we'll read it, right? Yeah, I know. Yeah. And I'm like, people are mean, man.
They're very mean. And I was having this conversation with the comedian. When I started putting stand-up clips in 2014.
With who?
Another comedian.
Huh.
He was telling me like comments are so mean.
Yeah.
In 2014, when I used to put a video, the comments were beautiful. Like used to get these paragraphs of someone who's like, I'm talking to Kenneth, who's like a human being. He's put up this video. He must have spent a lot of money. And they used to write like amazing feedback.
Personal, very personal.
Very personal. Like, I loved your video. I was looking forward to this all week. You kind of lost me at the 3 minute mark because I felt like, you know, the angle was confusing. 5th minute mark, what you said really resonated with me. I don't get those comments anymore. Now it's either love it or one paragraph of some vitriol from some guy, what a bad day. So I told my comic friend that I think we've reached a point that we have to stop reading comments. I don't think there's anything positive coming from it at all. Like from 2014,
it's been 10 years.
10 years. The quality of comments is really degraded.
And everyone feels this?
Like, I mean, I don't know about everybody, but I don't think anything constructive is coming from comments anymore. I would rather read a DM. A DM is far more personable and respectful. And I have the privilege of doing stand-up, so I talk to the audience after.
Yeah.
They tell me like, hey, we miss your music stuff. Please do more music.
Yeah.
That's so much better than, this sucks. What do I do with this sucks? But hey, I miss your music. Can you do some more music?
That's actionable.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were saying the comments.
Yeah. I just feel like I just feel like the process of putting content out there.
Yeah.
It seems easy, but it's really hard. So one is it requires a long time and it's getting even longer to kind of start scaling up.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of the distribution has now become offline. We spoke to Varun Maiya yesterday. Do you know him?
Yeah.
He was like, dude, I'm just telling creators now, you put content out there, start picking up the phone and telling your friends, anyone who has some decent followership to start sharing it. Don't wait for the algorithm to blow you up because it's unlikely it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You have to get distribution offline. So one is, it's taking longer for even great content.
Yeah.
Apparently, what did he say yesterday about something like YouTube? Apparently, you can tell YouTube that, hey, this guy has less than 50,000 subscribers, but he's making or she's making great content. Like, you can do it thrice a month. And every YouTube member can actually like recommend 3 comics. Three creators, right? Something like that.
Yeah, 3
that
you can recommend.
Yeah, I really love this person who has less subscribers. So everyone is realizing it's getting harder to get attention. Second is, of course, there is impatience in the viewer.
Yeah.
In 2014, people can watch a 15-minute video and not get distracted. Today, I think I've now seen TV shows coming out in 1-minute episodes. Like the dopamine hit or like the shortness of attention is like, I sometimes wonder about this, you know, like.
I don't fully agree though. I don't feel like the shortness of, I think things can exist at the same time.
Yeah.
I think both are happening where I love reels.
Yeah.
It's my favorite pastime.
Yeah.
And the joy it brings me, I would say surpasses stand-up. Like sometimes I look at a reel and I'm like, why am I even doing stand-up? This one reel is the funniest thing I've seen in my life. At the same time, there are moments where, like I see your podcast, I'm a big car guy. Autocar has a great podcast with Hormus, who's like, has these amazing stories about the automobile industry. I actually will watch the whole 50 minute, even though I should be taking care of my child. So I think both exist at the same time. But you said an interesting thing. You said even great videos don't get
attention.
I just want to, I don't know, just a piece of advice is, I don't think anybody deserves to go viral. Like, it's out of your control. Like, yeah. I am very lucky that I was at the right place at the right time. The older I get, the more I realize that everybody works hard. And I worked really hard. There's no denying it. I started making videos when I was 17. I didn't go to a lot of college trips and stuff because I used to shoot videos and edit. Because I was so obsessed with making a career out of content creation and performance. I sacrificed a lot, but it still could not have happened for me.
Did your friends make fun of that? Like, did they think that it was either attention-seeking or like totally off the regular?
Yeah, they thought I was like, off. I don't think they thought I was attention-seeking. They really thought there's something off with me to spend so much time on videos. And the videos were silly. So they were like, it's not like you're trying to change the world. You know, you're not putting some motive. You're just doing silly, dumb stuff, but you're spending 12 hours to edit it.
Yeah. At what point did you realize you're onto something? Was there an aha moment where like, okay, fuck, I'm actually doing something right?
I had more that I think I should stop. Because when I went viral in 2014, by that time, Tanmay...
What went viral?
The middle class restaurant clip. By that time, Tanmay, DVF, even Kanan and Biswa had gone viral.
Yeah.
These were my colleagues.
Yeah.
So then at that moment, I was like, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I should just stop.
Were you guys together, like,
yeah,
friends?
All of us kind of came from the same scene. Biswa, Kanan, me.
Were you the Bangalore boys?
Bangalore boys. Tanmay was like a very supportive older brother kind of figure.
He's incredible that way, right?
I still tell him, like, whenever I have a doubt in life, I call him up and he gives me like the best advice, which he feels he doesn't. And I thought like, okay, I think it's not for me. I've been creating content for 6 years. I've been doing stand-up for 4. Maybe I should just stop. Like, but yeah. Everybody said I was good. All my colleagues said, and the worst part of this was like, why aren't you viral yet? That's the worst thing. And I was like, okay, I guess it's not for me. And I think the moment I gave up...
Is when it happened.
I'm not kidding. Like, I have my friend group. I put the middle class video edit on. My Bangalore friends. They're not comics. And I asked them for feedback. I was like, this is probably the last video I'm going to put. I think this is the weakest joke I have. They're like, this is very good. I was like, sure, man. 3,000 people are going to see it, whatever. I put it and then hit 1,000,000. And because I had a...
How long was that?
8 minutes.
8 minutes, sir.
And because I had 160 videos before that, like the Sham and the other stand-up videos, my channel could get a following.
Yeah.
It was not like a one-hit wonder where...
Yeah, they came, they saw this 8 thing, and then they saw 10 more things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the hard work paid off, but yeah. It could have not happened for me. So, yeah. That's why I'm like, this whole notion that I've made a brilliant video and it's not being seen, I feel like people need to... accept that not everyone gets their day in the sun.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm saying this is because a lot of my comedian friends stopped doing comedy. And my friends who create videos stopped making videos because they thought like me that maybe it's not for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a far worse outcome when an artist stops creating.
Yeah.
So I feel if it's harder now, the byproduct is you'll become a better artist.
Yeah.
Because instead of 4 years, or 6 years that it took me, it'll take you 10 years.
Yeah.
But damn, at 10 years, if you become a viral thing, you can coast that for another 30.
Yeah.
Because you have been doing it
for so long.
For so long.
And you also honed your craft. Like, you are much better today than you would have been 10 years back, right?
Yeah, and we talk about this in comedy all the time, that going viral too soon in your career is a bad thing.
Really?
Because you have to polish your craft, find your voice. If you go viral and you're substandard or a mediocre content creator or a comedian, The world has given you this huge opportunity to show yourself. And if you're not good...
Yet,
then you just kind of fall off. But if you had gone viral when you were kind of saturated with experience, then you can sustain that. So when I went viral, I had done corporate shows, I had done crowd work shows, I had done improv.
Yeah.
I had done shows in a noisy club, I had done shows in 1,000 auditorium.
You had bombed multiple times.
Bombed 1,000,000 times. So nothing could faze me. So when the opportunity came, I could maximize the shit out of it.
Yeah.
But if you...
That's a very good point.
Yeah, and it's actually... It was so devastating to see my friends go viral and then tell that to myself that maybe I'm not good enough. And when I went viral, I had just given up. I don't want anything from the world. Fuck it. I'd saved up money and Abish Matthew was a comic. He said, I'm going to New York to do this improv course. Do you want to come? I said, sure, man, at this point, might as well do improv and quit. And I went to New York, and at that point in 2014, there were 7,000 open micers in New York. Okay, and to get a spot, I had to wait for 6 years.
Are you serious?
Yeah, in 2014. So now it must be, I don't know. So then it was a perspective shift that Kenny, you're so arrogant that you want to go viral when you have been doing spots, you've been doing corporate shows. So it kind of made me more humble that, you know what, maybe don't give up. Just enjoy the stage time. And when I came back, I went viral.
That's the thing what they say about brand also, right?
Yeah.
You would much rather have very small amount of people.
Yeah.
I think the Airbnb, two people have said this in very different contexts. I don't know if you know this comedian called Andrew Schultz.
Of course, yeah.
He said this, he and Akash do like, some, now he's blown up.
Yeah.
Again, I was following him like 10 years back. He was doing this underground.
Who are you following right now? Let's make a list because we know they'll blow up.
Right now, I'll tell you my favorite guy right now in comedy is this, maybe it's a Maharashtrian thing, but there's a guy called Tarang Hardikar.
Yeah, I know Tarang, yeah.
His weird way of...
He'll be so happy to hear. I play badminton with him.
Really?
Yeah.
Is he like that in real life?
He is.
Think he's putting on a show, but
no.
Tarang, he's actually that awkward?
Tarang is shockingly eccentric. When we play badminton, I tell Tarang, Tarang, you can celebrate when you get a point. And he's like, oh, yay. I mean, yeah.
Sounds like it. But I love him.
Yeah.
And me and my mom...
You know, good eye, dude. Tarang, we all think he's a great writer.
Yeah.
A great comic. He's just not blown up there.
Yeah. But I think he's growing up now.
Yeah,
or maybe I see a lot of him because
My
mom and me, our Instagram chat is 50% Tarang videos. The recent one was about Bombay. And in that also, there is one joke which I think the crowd did not catch.
Yeah, it happens a lot. Tarang will bomb with one set.
Yeah.
And the next venue he goes, that same set he kills.
Really?
Yeah, so his writing is very specific.
Yeah.
But when it kills, it destroys.
Yeah, he's like... There is no lead astray road. And I was like, this is such a brilliant joke. He's talking about linking road. He's like, all roads are linking road.
Yeah, yeah.
There is no lead astray. And the audience was like, I was like, fucking, I had to pause and finish laughing.
Yeah.
But I was like, why isn't the audience doing this?
Yeah.
But yeah, Tarang is someone.
You sang Andrew.
Andrew Schultz and Brian Chesky, the Airbnb founder. They both said something interesting. And probably in hindsight, the Airbnb founder said, you know what? I would much rather not scale the business too much. Only 200 people who use my product and fall totally in love with it.
Yeah.
And I will iterate my product only for them.
Yeah.
My experience, my product, everything only for them. And Andrew Schultz said the same thing. I had to go into these underground, you know, clubs and 5 people in the audience and keep iterating it to know who I, like what I stand for. And even like for brands, I think it's the same thing. If you get too much attention too soon, and your product is not good enough and it's not ready, I don't think consumers give you a second chance.
It's a gift and a curse. Like Kanan and I were talking about this, how when we were young and doing open mics, we tried way more risque jokes and we found the ceiling and then we used to scale back.
Oh, really?
Now we can't do that. The consequence is too high because everybody knows who I am. So I can't just go to an open mic and say something. See, when I just disclaimer, comedians don't mean what they're saying. So if I say something I don't mean, but my goal is the laugh, the audience will be like, why does Kenneth believe in this ideology? And I'm like, but just forget who I am, just focus on, I can't do that anymore. But I'm lucky that I had 5 years of learning the skill, failing.
Push the envelope and come
back. Push the envelope, learn the skill. So now I get the attention, I know the responsibility. But if you get stunted, the moment you get viral, right? You can't do something crazy.
You stand for something more than who than just yourself.
Yeah. So it is a gift and a curse. So it's a very good way of looking at it, that maybe you're not gone viral yet because you're not ready yet.
Mm.
And make all the mistakes now. Like nobody's watching you, especially as an artist.
Create the body of work.
Yeah, create the body of work and you'll only get better. So when you go viral, you're like, I have a system in place.
Yeah, you can take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Airbnb thing of you saying, there's a book called Small Giants, which really eased my insecurity and stress about, because I'm surrounded by brilliant people, like I'm like you and Tanmay, like these are all like brilliant people who talk about scale all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the scale conversation is very stress inducing.
Really?
Yeah, like, oh, should I be having a merchandise business? Should I also have a course that's giving me passive income? Should I be training comedians on how to be, and also do stand-up, and have 4 comics under me who do corporate shows? And then I read a book called Small Giants that spoke about restaurants or small businesses that chose not to scale.
Yeah.
And they are very happy with their 1 million, 2 million, 3 million turnover every year. They're very happy knowing every employee by name. And that gave me the validation that it's okay to have a 5-person team versus a company that's scaling all the time. Because I didn't find joy in that.
Yeah.
And I thought, is that wrong? And I was like, no, that also exists. You can do both.
Yeah. So it's a very philosophical thing you're saying, because I think post-World War II, I mean, post-1895, the Industrial Revolution, human beings have become growth-obsessed in every possible way.
Yeah.
And now we are 8.5 billion people,
yeah,
when actually the Earth, all our institutions, from banks to governments, everything, kind of functions at 5.5-6 billion people on this planet.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be 8.5 billion people, right? And now we are even kind of cut down and lead to a lot of social mess. And I think our obsession with growth as a species,
yeah,
has been rather painful.
Yeah. So, what is the saying when a content creator goes viral? What is the common comment section? What happens? That now this person is going to suck.
Really?
Right. That's the pattern. A content creator starts off making meaningful content from the art, and they make nice, you know, they put a lot of love into it. They go viral, and suddenly you notice a shift where the money starts coming in. They get separated from, sorry to use the word middle class or whatever,
yeah,
from the common folk, and then they become in a bubble, and then they become the successful content creator, and immediately you can see the audience disconnecting from them.
Really?
It happens to stand up all the time. Like they say, Kevin Hart was funnier when he was poor, you know. This fellow, Jamie Foxx, talks about it with Seinfeld, that you start making jokes about, you know, stuff with my Range Rover.
Yeah.
And then the audience is like, what? We're like, what are you talking about? Then he's like, you know, when I won an Oscar, I kept the Oscar away because I didn't want to get that bug of like, oh,
I've arrived.
Because what you started off and you amassed that audience, you lose them when you start doing this disproportionate scaling kind of approach. And that's what is my fear also. Like, anytime I've automated an edit, I can see the audience reaction. And I was like, oh, maybe they're also coming for my edit. They were also coming for my overthinking script. So this growth thing, I very clear by our conversation now, had a big insecurity, maybe I'm not growing. And I think as I've gotten older, also another comment is, once you become successful, then you start giving gyan, is also the second comment, which is fully true. In my 20s,
You should, right?
Yeah.
I think anyone who reaches a certain level of success, at that point, they should start kind of
giving gyan.
Yeah, not giving gyan, but I think like what Tapna does, like give back, like, yeah, like genuinely
the
success for other people.
They say, nah, don't work so hard.
Yeah.
After they become successful.
Yeah.
It's the audience like, bro, you got here because you work so hard.
Yeah.
I think that thing of not giving back, sorry, I meant like, don't chase all of this growth, yeah, and all. But I did chase growth in my 20s, and I got what I wanted, and I realized that I should stop.
And you're happy where you are?
I'm very happy. I mean, obviously, I'm insecure. I could always love, I hear another person making more money. I'm like, oh, shit. But at the same time,
those conversations have gone off the charts. You
know? Yeah.
How much money do you make?
Why
are people talking about this?
Yeah, man. Is there a number?
Yeah, I never got it.
Yeah.
I never got it. Like, yeah, especially in the world of art and craft.
Yeah.
Like, my mom's a classical music singer. Like, I don't think in that circle of Pune classical music,
yeah,
they ever discuss how much money do you make per performance. It's a, yeah, very pure art form. And I think content is an art form.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
By the way, I love money. I'm just saying I love money.
Of course.
But it's endless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think people are shying away. Again, you're right. I think this growth obsession has come with pegging our identities as people to our economic value alone.
Yeah.
And that's the only measure. And everything else that we do as human beings, whether it's the relationships we build, the social impact we have, none of those metrics have been given any weight.
Yeah.
And only economic value has gotten weight. And I think it's a very capital, and as an entrepreneur, I know it sounds ironic. It's a very unidimensional way to think about human impact.
It's very age related. I did not talk like this in my 20s. In my 20s, I used to tell every comic, you should be working thrice as hard as any other comic. Mm-hmm. We should be putting content all the time. We should be writing new material all the time. Now that I'm in my 30s, I'm married, I have a baby, and I'm very blessed that I have everything I wanted growing up. Then I was like, bro, like, this is a sit and appreciate. Like I was telling you, and during COVID, I went to my wife's,
yes,
in-law, her house in Goa. And I was like, this is why I was working so hard. So I could go to the beach, I could play basketball, I could have a nap, you know. And my wife also has enlightened me. She taught me how to chill, you know, that you work so hard, you go on tour for a year and you come back and you recover over a month, then you go on tour again and then you're constantly thinking, was this video funny? She's like, what is the end goal? Like you're trying to
What is it? What is it?
It's to be happy, you know, it's to enjoy.
Did you reach that point more? Like, did success give you the comfort to think about what your eventual end goal is? Like just the ability to like kind of step back, switch off and think about it? Or was it fatherhood? Was it marriage? Was it?
It was therapy. The success gave money to go for therapy. And I'm very blessed that I get to do a career which I love, which is doing comedy and creating content. But it therapy really helped to kind of be aware of this checking in that you in your 20s, you wanted this, right? So you got it now. Now what? Then that, now I'm in that phase of asking that question, now what? So when I create content now, it's what you said. It's like I want a meaningful connection with the audience and not just views. Both would be great. But when I go do a show or when I meet someone on the road and they're like, I see Simple Ken, my podcast. I watch your content. I sit with my mom and I watch it. That is equally as fulfilling as money.
Yeah. Because I think it also comes down to marginal utility, right?
Yeah.
It comes down to marginal utility. Like, so when, for example, pre-2014, I'm assuming the marginal utility of like a super viral video which opens doors for money or paid gigs or the rate going up, etc., would have been super helpful, like very valuable.
Yeah.
But today it may not be because your baseline is so different. So the marginal utility is much lower.
Yeah.
But now, like that message from like a mother telling you that my son doesn't need until he sees a Kenny video, the marginal utility is so much more because you're kind of deriving value because you're not getting enough the comments maybe.
No, but it's also counterintuitive. That is the approach now. The more competitive the market gets, it's better to be more impactful with a few number of people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that, I have noticed, gives me more work. Because if I have that boy who was seeing me in fifth standard, he's the one hiring me for his corporate event today. So I feel that approach is the approach if you want to grow your business and be sustainable. Yeah. It's counterintuitive. It's like, oh, how can my business grow if I narrow down my focus?
Yeah.
I'm just talking about my career as a comedian and a content creator. Is the more hard-hitting every video is, the more impact I create with a person, then that I've seen this happen. They're like, I have to get Kenny for my event. Because I like him. I've made a connection with him. And that's very counterintuitive to make 2,000 videos which are just surface level. You had a calendar and calendars work, but not to the level of it's superseding the inspiration.
Yeah.
So many of these events have come where they were like, I saw you in college, you helped me during a tough time. We had an event, so I thought of you. I think that's achieved both.
Yeah.
I'm happy as an artist. My career is going to last longer because I'm motivated by the idea.
Yeah.
I'm creating a higher impact with a smaller number of people. I'm making 1,000% kind of impact on them. So when they have a monetary idea, they come to me. I don't deserve, I think, half the projects I get because there's somebody out there who gets way more views than me and is way more popular. But I feel people come for the impact.
For me also, like, they, I don't know, Mukul, my team has kind of, we've had very successful CEOs, founders, creators, you know, and this is like, for me, this is a very far more fanboy. With everyone else, I'm able to keep my own a little bit.
Yeah.
But with you, I'm like, oh man, I'm super, like, I'm not making this up. Because you did for me, like, I'm a little older than you. I'm older than you, maybe 4 or 5 years. For me, at that time, I'm like, fuck, this dude is so talented.
And so sweet.
That is, like, you genuinely are, maybe it's a target audience thing, maybe right time. Right?
Even target audience, what is the narrative now? That if you're creating content created for the young 20s, the young Gen Alpha, and then again I went into one one slump with the new special. I was doing the jokes about being 30, being married, parents getting older, they're gonna die someday, your health. And I'm watching Jen Alpha yawn in the open mic.
Really?
So I had a full like, oh my God, my career is over.
They can't.
I have outgrown the
audience.
I'm fucked now. Like, what do I do? But then I was like, there are two choices. Either I'm unhappy and I do what makes the audience happy and fail, or I'm happy and fail. I thought I would rather be happy and fail. So I just wrote a show for people in their mid-30s, which no brand right now is focusing on. They're focusing on the 18 to 25.
Yeah. That's also, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, nobody wants to focus on the 35, 40-year-olds. This I also learned from Adele. Adele also famously said, who's making an album for the 30-year-olds?
Yeah, it's true.
And I was like, no, I'm going to write the show I want. I'm going to talk about fighting in a marriage. I'm going to talk about parents, the fear of losing your parents. I'm going to talk about therapy. I'm going to talk about my friends dying of heart blockages.
Yeah.
Who wants to hear all? But I really want to talk about it for some reason.
Yeah.
And I wrote the show. It was very difficult. I started touring with it. And I could see people coming again, thrice, with their grandparents, with their parents, wow, with their young teenagers also, because I had a lot of intergenerational jokes. And then the counterintuitive thing happened. I wrote for an audience demographic that nobody cares about, which is not the business approach. But then I sold twice as much tickets because the first time they came, they're like, I can bring my dad for this. I can bring my niece for this. So I sold the same ticket twice. And then to a larger age group. And also I optimized it. I didn't swear. I didn't have any dirty jokes. So I knew I could get families to come sit. So I'm saying like, it's not a, it sounds like an artistic approach. It's not, it works very well as a business approach.
But that, talk about your process a little bit. Like,
yeah,
what's your process of content today? Like now,
yeah,
you have Netflix special, you're on Amazon, you're all over YouTube. You're, you know, you have a certain distribution might that already puts you in a place which, like you said, you can't be very risque and you can't go down that path. So what's your process today when it comes to creating?
No, when I say risky, the comedian's bar of risky is very high.
Yeah?
Yeah, like we say some horrific stuff, but it's not too bad. Like you can do ideas. But the approach is, I'm in a very unique situation where I have access to these platforms. Like if I go talk to a Netflix or Amazon, they give me the privilege of talking to them, which came from the YouTube virality. So it's, so I can't just, yeah, you know, discredit that.
Yeah.
But the approach is, it's not anything new. I always, when I'm in doubt, I just go back to myself. I'm like, Kenny, don't lie to yourself. Would you watch this video? Like, that's one advantage comics have. We know when something sucks.
Yeah.
Because you can't get away with it. Like, if you have a bad song, you know, the audience, I'm a musician as well. If you have a bad song, they clap at the end of the song. Even if it's shit.
Yeah.
And if it's a great song, they still clap.
Yeah.
Comedy, you know, if it's not funny, nobody's laughing.
And it's very hard to make people laugh.
It's the worst. I don't know why I do it, but it's just such a great challenge.
Yeah.
You could be a comedian that's 10 years veteran or 10 months veteran. You have the funnier joke, you will get the laugh. It's no bullshit.
Really?
Yeah.
I always think that people laugh at reputation also.
No.
Like, I think, like, for example, if Dave Chappelle says anything, or if you say, like,
if it's not funny, you know, maybe you'll get that momentum for 5 minutes. After that, it's silence. They're like, it's worse. They're like, ye kyun bomb kar raha
hai? Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why it's so hard to write a new special, because they're like, Kenny Sebastian, they all clap, yeah, and I have new material. And then the guy who came before me, is an open micer, was done his material for like a month. So he's killed. He's done a great job. I come with new material and bombing. They start looking at each other. They're like, does this guy? I'm like, I'm sorry, it's a part of the process. Jokes really humble you. When you write a joke, it's not funny. It has to get there. So
what's your process like?
Maybe? Yeah, so the process is simple. I'm like, if it's a surface level, haha, one chuckle joke, it goes into short form.
Okay.
Because it's not, the person's not going to remember you. They're going to swipe through. So just give up. Do the fun, quick laugh. So that's a shorter reveal. The long form YouTube video is where my heart and soul goes into.
Yeah. A lot of people think that YouTube is like the temple of content. It's still the temple of content. It Everything is. Else is kind of peripheral.
I think I saw the podcast, Tanmay also said, like, it's the appointment watch. You know, it's like people are coming there to click the video. So that's where I show my craft. It's where the edit is done. I also edit my video, so 20, 30 times edit, sound mixing, color correction. It's where I showcase my talent, because I would say even more than Amazon or Netflix, most people in the planet are going to watch YouTube, because it's free. You can't beat free.
Yeah.
So YouTube is my A game goes into YouTube. And another approach is also, I get caught up on, will this video do well, blah, blah. I always go back to what would 17-year-old Kenneth want. He's excited about an idea. Make the video. Because could you predict that middle-class video would go viral? No.
No.
So stop assuming you know
the audience.
The audience. Just make sure you didn't put a lazy video. Like, make sure you're happy. As I said, right?
Yeah.
I would rather be happy and fail than be make the audience unhappy and happy and me being unhappy and then fail anyway.
Yeah.
So that's the approach, that you have to be excited about the idea. You have to put your 100%. And that's YouTube. Now, Netflix and Amazon is... I go with, like, my baby to them. Like, my Santa special is my baby. I don't give that to brands. I don't give that to YouTube. That's for Amazon and Netflix. Because, I mean, they... Kudos to them. They have built that prestige of a Santa special. So, I have to give them the material that's been tested over an entire world tour.
Correct.
So this show that I've done recently, has I did about 65 cities across the world, and about 150 shows I did.
That's crazy, man.
So it's around 70,000 people have seen, bought tickets for it. So that's the stats I go with them.
And in those kind of tours, I'm always curious, like, do you improve as the tour goes on?
Yes. Like, I had a joke about grandparents being racist.
Well,
and I say the word, and I could say the word in India. But then in America, I can't say it.
Yeah, it's
too jarring. So I modified it in America. Sometimes a joke needs more context. Sometimes the audience is very intelligent. Suddenly you just spoon feed them. So it constantly improves. And I started noticing older people were coming. People are bringing their grandparents. So, like, you know, I think I should put one more joke about grandparents. Young people who are coming, 30-year-olds were getting their
parents,
their nieces and nephews.
Okay, huh?
I was like, okay, let me put like a Fortnite joke. So that creme de la creme reworked 200, 300 times. I'm not exaggerating, like literally 200 times I've done that iteration. I'm not even counting the open mics.
And I've heard that this process remains the same even if you've been doing this for 40 years.
That's what I'm saying. That's a stand-up. It humbles you. There's no shortcut. You can't write one joke and it'll work. It just...
I don't know whether you know this comedian. He was obviously like kind of went into this whole... Me Too situation, another.
Louis C.K. Yeah, of course.
His craft.
Why, bro? Why you ruined everything for us?
But there's a guy on Instagram, I forget his name now. But this guy who like teaches stand up. He's not a stand up comedian, but he teaches stand up. He observes how people do things and gives lessons on Instagram.
Oh.
He said, Louis C.K. looks like the most casual. Like, you're thinking he's winging through a joke.
Yeah.
Maybe you may not, but I always thought Louis C.K. was all of the most naturally funny human beings I've ever met. Like, I've seen, right? He's just so funny just by the way he talks and the way he enunciates.
Yeah.
But then he said, look at the way he gives the same, tells the same joke on three different occasions. It's literally the fucking same.
Yeah.
So he's rehearsed his casualness.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, for a veteran with that kind of, like, he's done a TV show, he's done so many specials. For him also, and he, like, towards the end of his, you know, career, he's still kind of putting in that kind of practice. So it must be really hard.
You talk about this for an hour. Are you sure you want to get
Go, go. Yeah, tell me. Tell me about your process. Like, do you use a mirror? Do you use family? I've seen Abhishek Upmanyu, for example, sit with like a crowd, like very casually, like just reading jokes off a notebook.
Yeah.
Just seeing with
them. I know this venue also. It's called Leaping Window. People sitting down on the floor also changes the entire context of the joke. So, okay. So the thing is... It is not a coincidence that when you watch a stand-up show, you're laughing every 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Is real-life conversation like that? No.
No.
Right? So, it's not a coincidence that you're laughing every 15 minutes. How can you make people you've never met before laugh?
Yeah.
And I read this thing that laughter is also a familiarity thing.
Yeah.
If you watch a video alone at home, you don't chuckle. But if your sister or your father is sitting with you, so it's a social thing.
Yes.
So how can a social thing, like you laugh hardest with your best friend, your uncle has the best joke because he knows the family. How does a social thing work from a stranger?
Yeah.
There's another aspect of you go to a comedy club, you walk in and people are laughing, right? 5 minutes ago, they were not. It was quiet. There was another comic bombing and this new comic came who they never met. And in 5 minutes, they have made the entire room burst into laughter. How is all of this happening? So half of the answer is we don't know. And because we don't know, it's done on ground. It's done on the field. Because we don't know. We don't know why. And laughter is involuntary. You laugh first and then you're like, abe, why did I laugh? Yeah, right? Yeah. So we don't even control our own laughter.
Correct.
So there's a lot of unknown things happening. That's why a comedian has to go on field. You can't do it like a song where you compose it in a studio and then go perform it or ask three people, kaisa laga.
Wow.
Stand-up, unfortunately, from the day one has to be told to an audience. And as you're telling this half-baked idea, you notice that, oh, the women are responding, the men are not responding. But on the fourth sentence, the men respond and I completely lose the women. And in the sixth sentence, one old chap giggled there. At the eighth sentence, one young kid giggled. So you have to go back and be like, why is that happening? And then you feel like, maybe it's cause in this. So there's a men and women humor difference as well. I feel men laugh at absolutes and women laugh at detail.
Mm.
They like the beautiful kind of complication of life.
Yeah.
Is where they like humor. Guys like, well, wow, yeah, usko ek chana diya, gir gaya ho. Absolute. Chada mara, gir gaya ho. Absolute. That's mainly. So I've gone to college shows where they divide the men and women.
Yeah.
I'll say one joke, all the men laugh, all the women like, what? I make one joke, all the women laugh, the girls like, yeah, yeah. So it's fascinating. So
it's understanding the audience so deeply.
Yeah, right? It's very cool. And it's very nerve-wracking because sometimes you do the same joke at an 8 p.m. show, 10 p.m. show, nobody's laughing. And then I went through all of this, like, why? And then I find out that there was a parking issue at 10 p.m. and 9 p.m. So everybody's annoyed. So they're tired and they're irritated. So it was not my fault. So I'm like, how the hell do you factor in?
Correct.
So it's all of that. So with stand-up, the approach is constant working, polishing, reworking, and different sets of audiences. So if I go to a college, I'm like, oh, the college guys like the dating jokes more.
Yeah.
Then I went to an entrepreneur's meet. They didn't like the dating joke. They like the marriage joke, obviously. Right. Maybe that's an age difference. Then I go to an old people's, like something like a Gymkhana audience. Old people love dirty jokes.
Really?
Yeah, you would assume they would like, yeah. They're quiet for the nice polished jokes. I make a dirty joke, all the uncles and aunties. Women love dirty jokes. They don't like to admit it. My favorite test.
Older women or just women in general?
Moms.
Really?
Moms love dirty jokes. Because they're so fed up of putting up a poised kind of thing.
Correct.
I make a little dirty joke and they love it.
Yeah.
A little sexual tension joke like, she must be getting a lot. And she's like, and because she's like so frustrated being a mom all the time. She's like, I also like to talk shit. So
I have noticed that with my parents, by the way.
Yeah.
They started swearing now. I never thought that they were very comfortable with it. Like,
yeah.
Hindi stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah. Not like polished English stuff.
Nice.
This is like Hindi, like vulgar stuff.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they become kids.
Yeah, it's
pick up a car and go eat aloo paratha. I mean, where's the health?
CK has a joke, no? That before your mom gave birth to you, she had a whole life.
Yeah.
Like even my daughter, Emily, she doesn't even know how Teresa and I used to date, go get ice cream, go watch movies. She'll now see us always as parents. So you do all of these combinations over 200 shows.
Yeah.
And you can already realize the level of obsessiveness.
Yeah.
You finish a show, you don't celebrate the show. My wife is also like, you look so stressed. I'm like, oh, the fourth joke didn't work.
Yeah.
The 18th joke didn't work. 24th joke worked really well today. Why?
Is this by memory? Like, are you like, do you do this line by line? Like,
yeah, everyone has different methods. Some people like to write it. I do it from memory. I just do like bullet points. I know my topics. Each joke is kind of, because when we did the open mic, we were working on that chunk.
Okay.
So we kind of remember it in chunks. That my dating chunk worked well today. My dating chunk didn't.
Well, so you like, but that's really hard, right? Like, do you kind of fumble in the middle? Like, what if you have like a memory fade or something? Like,
that's also, I get this question a lot. But see, this won't happen to you. Imagine if I gave you this assignment that for 3 weeks, you have to say 4 lines every day.
Mm.
After 6 months, if I ask you those 4 lines, you'll remember. Like, bro, for 2 months, I said those 4 lines every day.
Correct.
So that's how we did the chunk, you know? I did a 5-minute bit for like 2 months. Then the bit got ready. Then I go to my next 5-minute bit for 2 months.
So it's so all you know, it's like second nature.
Yeah.
And what's life like? Like now as a creator of stature, of scale, what does a day in the life of Kenny look like today? Like, how do you think about it as a business? How do you think about it as your team? How do you think about it as now you're a dad, financial responsibility? And like, how does your passion, obsession, desire, love for your craft translate into a profession and a living?
So the insecurity of losing money is the foundation of everything. My dad went from Navy to, he worked in Siemens, and then he lost his job. And at a young age, I experienced that things can change at any moment. So that's been my approach day one. When I started doing stand-up, everybody told me stand-up is a bubble. So my approach is every day pretend like everything's going to end tomorrow. So the approach is diversification. When I started doing stand-up, I was like, I need to make sure content creation is constantly happening. And when I'm doing public shows, I need to do a corporate version of it.
Yeah.
Because you can't do a public show all the time. So I have a corporate set, because I'm sure if I perform in public, I was constantly thinking of how can I branch out. At a lot of these public shows, there's people working in IT, Bangalore. They used to come up to me and say, hey, can you come to my office? Then I'm like, okay, this is a way to make money. So then I wrote a corporate set. And then you start incorporating outsourcing. So I'm like, how do I shoot and edit? So then you also find out people who can do shooting, editing, sound mixing. So you have that system in place. So in a day, I saw it as two lives. My day is a content creator and my night is a stand-up comedian. And both fuel each other. From our earlier conversation, stand-up exists only because of YouTube. So I cannot ever not do YouTube when I'm doing stuff.
That's your foundation.
Yeah. That content creation is distribution. Distribution brings me ticket sales.
Correct.
And beautifully, what I do in stand-up is my content.
Correct. So it's a nice flywheel.
It's a nice, beautiful circle of life.
Yeah.
Then I was like, what if stand-up gets banned? I thought of all of that.
Why was that?
Do you remember in Bangalore, they once banned dancing? You couldn't dance in a club.
What?
Yeah, some weird rule. I remember they used to say, if you listen to music, like, you can't dance. You can listen to music, don't vibe.
So
like, India was like that. So I was like, what is?
When was this?
Yeah. So that's India. Kendra Vidyalaya and India prepares you for everything. So yeah, I'm in the mindset of sab kuch bhi ho sakta.
Yeah. So if stand-up gets banned, then like, do you have other monetization?
Yeah, do I have another performance format ready? So I do music comedy.
So I've like, seen you pick up the guitar.
Correct. So I'm like,
look at that chai toast thing. What was that?
Chai time,
yeah.
Yeah, chai toast.
Yeah, I
really tried to get a sponsor for that. Anyway, so chai time was, again, I couldn't create stand-up in a pace that the audience was demanding. That's when I went viral. Mm. So like, how can I get something quick, but it's also good quality? And I realized I'm a good improviser. So chat time was prop comedy. Because stand-up doesn't allow props. So I was like, why don't I do prop comedy? So I used to get a prop subject for that episode. So biscuits, I used to get all the biscuits and I used to have jokes about all biscuits. One was about cleaning supplies, one is about ironing, one is about cooking. Mm. So I just found like...
I remember that, yeah.
Then music is a format. Corporate shows is a format.
Corporate shows are tricky, right? Because like, people are not there at a corporate party or whatever to listen to comedy. It's not like they bought a ticket. This is a side thing. And I think I sometimes find it very disrespectful to artists when there's a bar, when the people are serving food. It's not a good thing. Whether it's musicians, like it happens with like, these places where the music is kind of the background thing and there's like a live band and everyone like talking. I find it very painful. I'm the only idiot standing there like clapping after every song and like, guys, like, but it's so painful. Like, so I don't know how stand-up kind of fits in corporate.
I mean, Chandana, I come from so much abuse of the arts that I'm like a refugee. So I'm just so grateful that people just even pay money for a ticket. I come from Kendriya Vidyalaya where you're not allowed to sing, you're not allowed to draw. So me thriving as an artist is the biggest miracle of life. So when somebody doesn't listen to a musician, I'm like, of course, this is normal. When somebody doesn't listen to a comedian or goes to the bar, I'm like, of course. When people listen, I'm like, wow.
That's luxury.
Yeah, luxury. Like a lot of comics or a musician says they're disrespecting you. I'm like, you shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, artists can't pay rent.
Yeah.
I come from that much abuse. So what you're saying is obviously right, but
I will do it.
Also in India, we don't have education. We have poverty. So I'm like, let's fix that first.
Yeah.
We will come to arts one day.
So corporate shows is one. Like how many do you do like in a year or in a month or whatever?
I try to aim for 2 to 3 a month.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And as you said, you need to recognize this is not a stand-up show. You're an employee. You've been hired for a service. They have not come for comedy. They want clean humor. They want to be entertained for 25-30 minutes.
And this is a short set.
Right? Yeah. So I have designed a set that doesn't offend anybody, very vanilla, does the job, get out of it.
Wow.
Yeah. So again, these are all diversification.
Because
what if stand-up stops, I can do corporate shows.
Correct.
What if corporate show stops, I'll do music shows.
Yeah.
And then content creation.
Have you flirted with like acting and like kind of getting like, because
yes,
those worlds are very incestuous that way, right? Like you kind of,
I explored forward acting. I realized that the industry has not had the democratization as stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
It's still very a closed system. You don't get a good role. And independent cinema have destroyed people's lives. Like they put their life savings, movie flopped. Now they're on the road. So I don't want that, bro. I like profit. Startup is very profit friendly.
It is, yeah.
Musicians struggle to make a profit.
Yeah.
You need to fly a 6-member team. Musical equipment is so expensive.
Yes.
Put 5 people in a hotel.
Yeah.
Stand-up has a very good P&L.
Yeah. Because the cost.
Not good.
Yeah. And even like the overheads are very low.
Yeah.
Even like the kind of production you need, unless like, you're doing like stadiums or whatever.
Yeah.
Like a really good comedy center.
Yeah.
With maybe 200 people. It's not that expensive, right?
Yeah. So this whole disaster approach helped me during COVID.
Mm.
The moment COVID happened, I had a thriving content vertical,
yeah,
which a lot of comedians didn't focus on. Mm. They were like, I'm a comedian first. But I was like, what if they ban comedy, bro? They're like, shut up. But when COVID happened, I didn't see any slump in my revenue because I was making... Now the time I was giving to stand-up, I was also giving to content. So my revenue was consistent.
Wow. So kind of made it risk-free that
way. Yeah. So I fully believe if you're an artist in India, miracle, bro. Second, entertainment tax didn't exist for stand-up, by the way.
Okay.
When I started in 2014, when I used to do auditorium, entertainment tax wasn't a thing for stand-up.
Okay.
Then the government found out that, hey, these guys are making money. Yeah. We got taxed. So... can you believe, like, they didn't even know what stand-up was? And so that's what I'm saying. Like, it's so new that the government didn't tax us. And now they do.
Government will find anyone, anywhere where there's someone making money.
Yeah.
Government will find a way to get there. As they should. Like, number of people paying tax is low.
Yeah.
So they'll find other ways. Like, they suddenly started seeing startups make money, angel tax.
Of course.
And then they started seeing, you know, real estate, and they kind of went.
Yeah.
And the GST.
Stocks also.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying, like, the elephant in the room is 2 things. That you're an artist. It is not meant to be stable.
Yeah.
So please behave like a cyclone is going to come and destroy everything.
Yeah. Be smart about it. Yeah.
Be smart. Always have. I'm not even being, like, unreasonable. It happened in COVID where you couldn't do a public show.
Yeah, for like a couple of years.
For 3 years. So imagine if you're a pure stand-up comic, you're devastated. You don't have any other skill set.
No income, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the comedy scene in Bangalore died because of COVID. Because a lot of cafes that had open mics shut down. So a lot of new upcoming comics that the India could have seen were squashed because of COVID.
They went back to 9-to-5 jobs.
Yeah, because it's a privileged profession. Because you don't make money from it.
And what's your team like? Do you have a full-time team? Do you work with freelancers? Like, how do you
manage? I realize I'm very bad at managing people.
Okay.
I try to have an employee and stuff, and then I get frustrated that they're taking a salary and they're not working. Then I realize it's my fault. I'm supposed to give them work. So I realize that I'm a good project guy.
Yeah.
That when I do a project, I hire everybody on a project basis. We get the job done. It takes 6 months of my life. And then after that, the project is ready. We part ways and, you know, I do another project. Because my job is also cyclical.
Yeah.
6 months I'm touring, I can't do content.
Yeah.
Then 6 months I'm doing content, I can't do touring.
Yeah.
So this employee company structure doesn't work for me. Project stuff really works well. And also I realized that the field I'm in, people's skill levels vary. That some DOP in Bombay is excellent. And then I do a Chennai, then I find even a better DOP, then I do Delhi. I'm like, acha, you know, it makes sense to work with everybody.
Yeah.
And so the second...
Learn from everyone, yeah.
So the second one I was trying to say is the elephant in the room is also, you won't be relatable forever. So that's the kryptonite. No matter how talented or smart or great your content is, you're not going to be relatable or relevant forever.
Really?
Yeah, it's impossible. I mean...
Yeah,
you can't. It's just impossible. It's. I used to love watching Scooby-Doo growing up. I don't watch it now. Yeah. I used to love The Matrix growing up. Now I don't watch The Matrix.
Yeah.
I'm like, is this a human nature thing? So you need to factor in that one day your career is going to end as a content creator or as a comedian. And that's okay. It's very natural. So really be smart about your investment.
So how? So you kind of diversify investments outside as well, outside of...
Yes. From day one, I told all my friends who started making money from comedy and music and that it's going to stop one day. Don't go buy a Mercedes.
Expensive cars, yeah.
Don't buy now. Get your house. I keep telling you, get a house, get your retirement fund and pay off anything else you want to do.
Be debt free, yeah.
Then you start blowing money. And only in the first 3 years, only invest in cameras and things that make you money. That was my approach from day one. And I have a studio at home, so I don't pay rentals anymore for.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this is a cost that is so easy to cover.
Yeah.
Just buy a camera, it costs Sony A7 is like 1.6, you can get it for.
Mm.
And you'll use that every day. Then the hesitation to create content also reduces.
Correct.
So you're not going to be relevant forever. And India, there could be something. And as an artist, you shouldn't exist early because it's not a conducive environment. So these three systems is what I do every day.
Yeah.
Have a corporate set, create content, do live stand-up shows, have a website. I even predict if YouTube and Instagram shut down tomorrow,
yeah,
have an email list. So when I do my
very smart
ticket shows, I have the emails of all my ticket buyers. So
now you know your audience.
Yeah, so I have like a 150,000 email list I have.
Oh, really?
Anybody wants to buy it for me? Because I'm like, what if Instagram shuts down?
Yeah.
I was there when Google Video sent me an email. Google Video shutting down. Do you want to back up your videos? I have that email with me. So why can't YouTube shut down one day?
Absolutely. Athletes actually do this very well, right? Athletes know that, like, cricketers will know that they're going to retire at 35, 36.
Yeah.
And they'll have 35, 40 years of being productive adults.
Yeah.
And take having the responsibility of family and so on.
Yeah.
So they... Like earlier, they would like start restaurants or, you know, Sachin and they kind of make investments. But athletes who don't do that well, like people who win Olympic medals and, you know, who are, come on, like in the India team, if they don't do that well, they suddenly like kind of...
Sorry, so the solution, instead of being so morbid, is to diversify into a new field. Then you can be relevant there.
Yeah.
Because they're seeing you new in that field, so they don't get bored of you.
Yeah.
So... I mean, it's very hard. Like, for example, you do a barbershop now. It's very hard for you to replace you as a host.
Yeah.
Like, this people brand is very hard to extend. Very few people have achieved it. But starting... one of my plans is to maybe get into some sort of hospitality. I really like real estate. So getting into some hospitality, getting into some training.
Mm.
Or even a space. I love teaching kids. So, like, some sort of that. That isn't like a nice avenue to get it.
Have you thought about starting your own brands, like getting into merchandising, getting into
like
creator-driven brands? Like Tanmay talks about it a lot.
Yes,
it's not taken off in India.
Yeah,
fully yet. Like the way the US is crazy.
Yeah,
US is absolutely crazy, right?
Yeah.
From gin brands to tequila to
Lanchilis.
Yeah, like cosmetics. Yeah. People have kind of playbooked it to the T.
Yeah,
but in India, it's not happened. Have you thought about?
I mean, again, I didn't want it to come from a place of fear ki you're not growing, you're not expanding.
Yeah.
It only came from self-preservation that you're an artist, you'll have a limited run, like an athlete. So please be smart. So I thought about merch and I realized that merch deserves the kind of attention I give stand-up. So I did do it in the middle. I made a massive amount of revenue, but I gave that away to a shelter, which was what was communicated. But I realized I can do it.
Mm.
But then I realized a lot of artists do merch very half-heartedly.
Mm.
They outsource it to somebody. And the audience is not dumb. They're like, you put one word and you're selling it. I'm like, put the heart and soul into your merch. So I am exploring merch, but I will only do it when I can do it well. But yeah, so these things kind of have kept my career going for a decade, which is go for therapy, have fail-safe.
Yeah, many fail-safes.
Many fail-safes, have multiple skill. And as an entrepreneur, I think the one thing I learned is that if you learn everybody's job, like I know how to shoot, I know how to edit, I know how to set a stage, I know how to sound mix, I know how to make a budget. Nobody can fool you also.
Yeah. Also, you also come across, and now that I talk to you like one-on-one, you also come across as an extremely self-aware guy. Like, you know what you're good at. You're listening constantly. Like, people who are self-aware are very, like, absorbent of feedback.
Yeah.
I think that's what owns your craft a lot more. Because you are very, it makes flexibility very easy.
Yeah. I went to an art college. I studied painting for 4 years. It was the best learning for this field. It taught me that don't get into your head. There were two types of artists. One artist was the one who was pure to the art form. And I won't say his name, but he was the best artist I've ever seen. Created an amazing painting. He couldn't speak. Didn't have any sales in his bone. And he couldn't pay rent. Like, he used to spend his food money on canvases. And incredible artist. And there was another girl. She used to do splatter paint, which is like the black sheep of the artist community. Like, it's a hacker. She used to sell her paintings back then for 25 grand.
What are you saying?
She couldn't draw an apple. Okay. And I realized the solution is right in the middle. Okay. Do decent art, but be a good salesman so that you can pay rent. Because the tragedy is, if you're a true artist and you don't make a living, you will do something far worse, which is you'll stop being an artist. You'll quit.
Yeah.
Which is horrific.
Correct.
So it's very important to be profitable.
That's the reality, right? No one tells you. Like, people romanticize every career so much.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurship, for example. Like, I'm guilty of romanticizing and glamorizing entrepreneurship. It's fucking hard, dude.
Yeah.
It's taken a personal toll on me, which I'm not able to quantify or even qualify, frankly, in terms of like 9 years of this. Like, it's lonely, it's difficult, it is ego bruising, it is network eroding, it is financially irrational to do it. If it works out, great. The chances of it working out are so low.
Yeah.
For so long, you're stressed. Like, and we glamorize it because we really want people to create jobs in the country and we have to. But it's not easy. So idea is to like prepare people for it.
Yeah. I mean, the analogy is, Trace and I, our baby's 1 month, 1 week old. And we were very lucky that our friends told us how hard it is.
Yeah.
And because they told us how hard it is, we did not expect it to be easy.
Yeah.
And because we didn't expect it to be easy, it's been so smooth.
Yeah.
Because we didn't like freak out when things got hard. Like, it's supposed to be like this.
This is what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Like. So that's what I was also trying to tell people, that you could work very hard, you could do everything right, and it could not happen, and that's okay. What's worse is you stopping being an artist. That's a huge disservice to you.
I think resilience comes from building tremendous mental comfort with worst case situations.
Yeah.
This is the worst that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Let me build comfort with this.
Yeah.
And then even if that happens, you're like, okay, I was prepared for it anyway.
Yeah.
And then that muscle is just...
That's recovered. Very enlightening, because that's what I learned from therapy as well.
Yeah.
That just verbalize the worst case scenario. The video won't do well. The special will fail. Can you handle it? I say, I can handle it. Then this sense of fearlessness that comes, like, oh, I'm ready for the worst case scenario. And it's never a worst case scenario.
Like, imagine it. Like, genuinely imagine it happening and kind of imagine yourself in that situation and then kind of...
Maybe I'll be over it in a month.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be comfortable. And then everything else just seemed like a cherry on top after that.
Yes.
You can only go up.
That's why I say I see my career as a massive, giant boulder of a cherry. Because I constantly tell myself, anytime I have a bad show, I'm like, the fact that stand-up comedy exists in India is a blessing.
Yeah.
The amount of censorship we have, the amount of conservative thinking we have, and we are doing these jokes, is a miracle.
Yeah.
How, I'm super, like, I don't waste my money.
Yeah.
And these people have spent like $2,000 to come see me. I better give them a good show.
Yeah.
You know? So there's no arrogance there. It's just like, it's a really good way of sustaining.
Yeah.
Stop becoming bitter about iska channel to 4 million subscribers, which obviously I have those moments where I'm like, I've been doing it for so long. Why don't I have 5 million subscribers? But then I sit down, I'm like, you know what it takes to get 5 million subscribers? Do you want to put that time? Do you want that time away from your wife and from your health?
Yeah.
Then I'm like, actually, no. Then I'm like, then don't whine. Yeah. Don't, if you can't sacrifice, then don't whine about the outcome.
What's the future? Sorry, are we rolling?
Yeah.
We're rolling. What's next in the frontier for you? Like, how do you think about this evolving? You're still young.
I'm 34 now.
34. So you're going to be a productive adult for the next 40 years at the very least. Right?
Hopefully.
But how do you think about, do you have like 5-year, 10-year views? Or
yes.
Is it evolving so fast that you're like, played as it goes, we don't know.
I think the only one dream that's left is to make a out and out comedy movie that is self-produced.
Okay.
That's the only dream left. And it can only be self-produced because I know how the system works. If you run it by the studio, you run it by the censor board, you run it by the producer, wo scene kaatne wala hai. And comedy mein, you need maximum freedom. Okay. And you need that one person's, you know, there's a big conversation about why comedy films are not funny today. It's because it's made art by community.
Yeah.
Back then, when comedy was good, it was one fellow's weird sense of humor which is permeating through the whole project.
Correct. And it was pristine and untouched. Yeah.
Because he found it funny or she found it funny.
Correct.
If you start asking everybody, you know, like, do you find the scene funny? They're like, we don't like finding funny, but this fella finds it funny, so you remove the scene.
Correct.
But a comedy movie can only survive if one person was like, iske upar ulti hota hai na, I love it. Scene dalo isko. So that's one dream. But my goal is to hopefully have a career for that long. And also create projects that only I can, which a new comic can't. I can take some more risks in terms of production. Like I can do a 1.5-hour special about marriage and parents and all of that. But a new comic papa, she or she can't do. They might have to resort to a more hard-hitting, funnier premise, but I can push the boundary of topics because I have the cushion of a good career. So that's my goal for the next 20 years, not to do some lazy shit. Yeah.
Who do you look up to, like, in this world of content? Not only comedy, but in general, like,
yes.
And not only India, but outside, like, who are your kind of, who, like, fuck, I want to learn this from this person. This person does this really well, or who kind of...
Like, John Mulaney in terms of writing.
I love it. He is so good.
It's like every special is brand new. Like you have to become a new fan of him.
Yeah.
Seinfeld in terms of work ethic and business sense.
And clarity. Like
and clarity.
Yeah, I agree.
It's to stand your ground. Nate Bargatze is a new guy.
I've not seen him. What's the name again?
Nate Bargatze.
Okay.
Again, clean guy. I like clean comedy. I find it like quite impressive.
It's hard to do, right?
It's quite hard.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm going to say, like, by the way, this Akash and Andrew.
Andrew, yeah.
they, by the way, observed the India scene. And I think Akash was bringing it up. When I went to New York that time, comics in New York saw YouTube as an inferior medium.
Really?
And we were talking about how our careers happened because of YouTube. And how we put all our content on YouTube. And they used to chase the HBO and Comedy Central specials. And we were like, put on a YouTube. And that's...
Yeah, do you know these guys?
Like, yeah, we know all of, I know Akash and... I've not met Andrew. And that conversation permeated. And Akash gives us credit. Those guys have forgotten. They saw the India scene and noticed how leveraging YouTube is great for stand-up.
Yeah.
Putting up one-hour specials is a great approach.
Yeah.
So I also feel like sometimes what we do here now works far better than what they're doing. Because entertainment is very saturated there.
Correct.
So we can break new ground here because there are no rules. So they are very like kind of stuck in their gatekeeping kind of structure.
Also here, the number of people watching and the kind of feedback coming is so high and so fast.
Yeah.
Like I now see, for example, Andrew and Akash, for example, did a whole segment on on Akash attending
the
wedding.
Yeah.
I found it hilarious, but I knew that they're smart enough because they know that this is going to get to like a few hundred million people in India who might start following them because of this.
Yeah.
Would see that there is like this whole, let's look at the India audience.
The people I look up to actually in India is Tanmay and my peers from Bangalore, Kanan, Biswa.
Even Biswa has invented himself so much over there from pretentious movie reviews. But even that, like, I don't think people who watch it today also realize how well scripted that was.
Dude.
That was fucking...
They used to kill themselves every episode.
It was, I'm sure, like weeks of effort for every episode.
Weeks and weeks. Kanan used to lock himself in the room in the night and just keep editing. He's like, it's not funny enough. He stopped it for his like mental health because the amount of pressure they were putting on themselves for a video too. It was like a sensation when a video used to come out. I learned a lot from watching. I also saw the toll it took on Tanmay. And I realized like something people don't talk about is if you don't take care of the other side, which is a mental and physical aspect, it affects your career.
Yeah.
So I'm not anti-career and anti-productivity and anti-capitalism. It's actually very pro-capitalism to take care of yourself.
Correct.
It's very pro-productivity to have the long game in mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's very pro-productivity to not think about growth all the time.
Yeah.
Because if you focus on quality, growth just forcefully happens.
Yeah. It's an outcome.
Yeah.
It cannot be an input. Yeah. I completely agree.
So I keep talking to Tanmay, I keep talking to all my peers, and I learn from... I noticed how the ensembles had an issue of pursuing solo careers. So I decided not to collab early in my career, which was very counterintuitive to what you're also talking about.
Yeah.
Because I was like, if I don't prove it to myself that I can go viral by myself, I think I'll second guess myself for the rest of my life.
Correct.
And I was like, I can't live with that. So it's okay if my success comes late. So when I went viral, after 4 years of that, I started collabing because I wanted to be like, be confident in your own work. I mean, it might not work for other people, but this was a thought I had that don't make an ensemble. I don't want to go on stage and be like, where is that other guy? Where is this? I don't want that. And I've seen that happen. So yeah. I feel like...
Pros and cons of that, yeah.
Yes. So constantly I watch all my friends like... You have to swallow a pill when you see your competitor do something that works really well.
Yeah.
So I go through that phase like, fuck man, what a great idea. They're doing so well. And then I get over it in a month. Yeah. And I'm like, maine ye kyun nahi kiya? It was right there.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, abhi chhapo isko. You know, go become his friend, find out how he did it.
Yeah.
And I do the same. And then you see exponential growth because as an artist or a content creator, coming back to the college thought was don't become the pure artist and don't become the pure
commercial
guy, because the pure artist refuses to take ideas that work.
Yeah.
And the pure commercial guy forgets why they started.
Yeah. And you also distance yourself from your audience a lot.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And upcoming artists, like for example, even Samay Raina.
Yeah.
Dude, I've seen that guy since his...
I'm going to talk about Samay now. he loves this.
I used to watch him do streaming of chess because I love chess.
Yeah.
And Vidit and him and like a bunch of these guys. And then suddenly he used to pull this dark humor stuff.
Yeah.
And then he just, amazing what he's doing with
whatever. Again, so counterintuitive, right? Imagine stand-up comedy, the most entertaining piece of performance, and watching a chess match is so painful. I know it's a great game, but holy crap, it's boring to watch as a newbie.
Yeah.
And he married those two.
Yeah. Again, passion. No, he's a good chess player.
Yeah, motivated by passion. It was not motivated by like, oh, let's look at the top five most shared sports. Chess is nowhere there. So that's what it's so counterintuitive that, especially if you're in the content creation business, I keep telling people, if you're going to make it so systematic, please go join an ad agency.
Yeah.
Then be freaking systematic there. But if you're motivated by creativity or art, just go with idea first. Do it so well.
Yeah.
You'll find an audience, and that audience, even Small Giants has a statistic, the book I was talking about. I think if you have 1,000 paying customers, that's enough to sustain a business. These are the 1,000 audience members that will buy anything you sell.
Correct.
So that's a very good number to calm your career path.
Yeah.
If you have 1,000 audience members who love your work, who you genuinely care about and you don't see as a number, and if they buy anything you do, you can sustain as a business. That's good revenue.
That's amazing. Actually, you know, before we let you go, we use our Sensei Smart 3 Razor as a tool for the skills that we want to teach. So last year, so this is a product we're very proud of, okay? This is a 99 rupee razor. That price point does not exist in razors.
Yeah, because I saw how complicated this is. I'm like, this
is gonna three blades, aloe vera gel for a young consumer who has acne, or thin beard, sensitive skin. You either get like a 200 rupee plus super premium good quality razor, you get a 25 rupee disposable. Okay. The 99 rupee price point did not exist. Okay. So like the advantage to be taken. So we got this at the right price, packaged it in a young way, all of that, right?
Yeah.
So last year for sale, we told people, you buy this and you sell it, and the people who sell the most, teach us your sales strategies. We had people in Bombay, local trains going up and down, just selling this.
Oh.
It was crazy to watch. And we learned so much from them. This year, like, this is your tool to make content. Whatever your platform, community, your... And it's okay if you don't have a followership right now.
Yeah.
Start creating one. But the tenets of content is your content has to be fun and your content has to sell.
Yeah.
So see if you can sell this, right? And Tanmay, for example, said, I want to make an Instagram page called Hair Wolf. And he made like this whole Instagram strategy. Varun yesterday said that, you know, I'm going to get creators to have, I'm going to create a content IP called Beef, and I'm going to get creators to fight with each other, and then they will be represented by wrestlers with bare chests and bare faces, and we should make like a WWE for Sensei Smart 3.
Okay.
And that was his idea.
Okay.
But I wanted to like kind of see how you would like kind of think about selling the Sensei Smart 3.
So I have to sell it in... How I would say.
Would you like integrate it in a joke, for example, or in your set? Or would you, like the way Urban Collab did with Bussi, for example?
I feel like people really underestimate the influence of women in men's life. Anything good I have in my life is because my wife told me, or my girlfriend suggested it. So I would do this offline. I have a lot of couples who come to my show. So I would obviously tell the audience, and obviously make fun of how unbloomed they're. Partner right now is. I'm sure there is some area they're lacking.
With this kind of stuff, you look upfront, is it?
Yeah, it's right there. It's like this fellow, ma'am, he wears a lot of hats. Do you want him to stop wearing hats? This fellow, ma'am, it looks like he's never put a cream on his face. This guy looks too oily. So, and also in a nice way, because some people have genuine problems they can't fix. But this is fixable. Like you can wash your face. I would offer this razor for free to all the women in the audience. Go have their partner. And tell them that just if you like this show, please ask your husband or boyfriend to use this. And I think that would actually have an actual ricochet effect where they would go after the show and talk about, you know, can he give us razors or shoes? And specifically give us an instruction to make sure our husband is shaved. So that would be a good concept.
That's really cool, yeah.
And I would ask for a perk singer, if you manage to shave your beast of a man, could you share it on story? It'll make my day because it makes me laugh. And then I would reshare back. And then people are like, wait, he got women to shave that. I said, yeah, bro, someone's got to do it. So I always make it fun for me first.
Entertain self, then everyone else taken care of.
Yeah, and then the woman's ending, the guy's like, bro, I think I should have shaved. And to be fair, like a woman's opinion on a man's life is quite important.
Very important.
So that's how I would.
That's right? Super smart.
Because there are days when I need something and my, and I'm struggling without it. I've told my wife, I still don't buy it. And then she buys it for me. So.
But one thing is going to happen is we're going to send you a huge hamper. We didn't get it because we're traveling around.
Okay.
But we're going to send you a huge hamper at your residence of okay. Bombay Shaving Company stuff and Bombay stuff, which is for Tracy as well,
okay.
or for other people in your family. And you guys can absolutely have fun with it.
Thank you.
But this has been such a pleasure. But thank you so much. You've been so generous with your time, your insights. And
thank you.
You're a really, like, really approachable, humble human.
Absolutely.
I really like you.
So next year, besides stop being humble and approachable, see, born in a lifetime. 2025, I decided to be like an arrogant, like, prick. So, thank you for calling you. Dude, I'm so ready for my Uncle Pay. Dude, I still tell you to shut up.
Yeah. I think one of my friends characterized it beautifully. He said, you start feeling irrational rage towards young people. That's when you know you have transitioned to uncle. I'm like, yeah, I feel that all the time.
It's not young people. It's irresponsibility and stupidity, which happens to be with some young people. I won't blame a generation, but I get it, dude. I look at, you know, you see those old uncles in a balcony, like, yeah, right. And you're like, what are you scared? I get it. His life must be so sorted. And he looks at
chaos.
He's frustrating him. They get it, dude. Uncle yell at everybody. Everybody's dumb fuck. And you should yell at them. I get it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
You should close. This is amazing, dude.
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah, man. This is fucking spectacular.